This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 205, where AC and I talk about all the latest cloud news, recorded live July 18th, 2017.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. If you're interested in all things happening at Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, Power BI, SharePoint, or .NET, look them up on Valid.nl.
Morning, AC.
Oh, man. I think I'm recovered.
Big weekend then.
My goodness. I guess, you know, last time we talked, I told you I was leading into running a swim meet. I guess you could say I was the head operator of the swim meet where you run the computer and all the timing comes to you. It was a pretty awesome experience. A lot of work, very intense.
Sounded stressful.
It was stressful. Friday night was very stressful because we found a data problem that was going on during the meet and we couldn't do anything about it until afterwards, which meant I got home around, meet was from 6 to about 8:30 in the evening. I got home around 10:15 after having a meeting to figure out what we're going to do. I was up until 1:15 or 1:30 trying to fix the data problem. And then my pickup to go back to the swim, back to the pool to be there by 6 a.m. was around 5 a.m. So I got I was about 4:30. I got about 3 hours of sleep that night.
Oh boy, that's brutal.
Yeah, it was brutal.
What night was that? Was that Saturday night, did you say?
No, that was Friday night with a little bit of sleep.
That's Friday night. Gotcha.
Saturday night, the people who did the meet kind of got together and let's just say we blew off some steam and I rolled in around 2 a.m.
You had an after party.
We had an after party and I can guarantee I did not have a very restful sleep. I did not feel terribly good on Sunday, but it was very good to get some real sleep Sunday night.
Yeah, real nice. Well, I was absolutely whacked last week at the end of it and Saturday night fell asleep at 9 o'clock and woke up at 8 o'clock the next morning. And so after 11 hours of sleep, I was feeling like Superman. You were hungover.
We were texting back and forth on Sunday and you're like, God, I feel great. And I'm like,
I feel like a million bucks. You feel like terrible.
I feel like I just gave you the $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. Oh dear. Oh, it sounds like it went really well though.
It did.
In the end.
It did. It feels good because I've had a couple people that were involved in the meet that said, you know, I've been doing this for years and this was the best run meet that we've done. So made me feel really good at that. And, you know, I'm looking forward to doing a postmortem with the league. And there's a lot of stuff that will change for next year. There's a lot of opportunity to digitize a lot of stuff, man. I mean, there's a lot of paper involved, but sure as mobile apps would be a godsend in this industry. So who knows, maybe something else I get to kind of play with over the next year. I got 9 months though.
Some prototypes. There you go. Yeah, nice. Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable, continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Services, and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as a leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more. Excellent. Hey, so in this week in the show, we thought we'd catch up on some of the latest news and goings on, and then also obviously followed up with a couple of picks at the end for people. So it's been a fairly busy news week, I guess, for want of a better word, mostly in the cloud and Azure space. So Do you want to kick things off for us with a bit of container news in Azure and getting stuck in?
Absolutely. I got two bits of container news. One of them is actually not Azure related. I talked about it a little bit last week that Kubernetes had a new release, 1.7, that came out just recently. And within the last few days, Google had announced that they have updated Google Container Engine, the Container Engine, GCE or GKE, which runs on Kubernetes. That now has been updated to 1.7. So really quick, update cycle right there to roll through and get the latest version of Kubernetes for their hosted Kubernetes offering.
Right.
So that's cool.
Very nice.
I have a link to that in the show notes. And man, I really wish Microsoft would come out with a hosted container as a service kind of offering like that. I do some stuff with containers for like utilities and everything. And I'll be honest, man, I'm putting my stuff on GKE because I just don't have to manage any of the hardware. I just don't have to deal with managing the Kubernetes environment. And
yep, the underlying infrastructure and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's a big deal.
Hopefully they'll do that. Hopefully we'll see something later this year. But hey, on the Azure container news, the Azure Container Registry has added individual identity, webhooks, and delete capabilities. So now what you can do is you can have individual Azure AD authentication. There were only two ways to authenticate against it, either by enabling a single admin account or by setting up a service principal. But now you can have different managed registries. You can sign into your registry using your AD credentials, your Azure AD credentials, and grant other people access to it as well. You also get access for delete functionality, where you can now delete a repository.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's a feature.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not just a feature. It's like the second feature on the list as well. It's pretty high up there.
It is.
Kind of a big one.
They do have another one too, where they have webhook support. So what you can do is to enable, I'll read straight from the blog post, they do a good job of explaining it. To enable cloud-connected workflows, they've added support for webhook notifications for registries so that you can configure webhooks to get triggered by push or delete actions and or delete actions. And you can also modify the scope of the webhook so that it gets triggered by the actions occurring for any repositories in the registry, a specific repository or a specific tag, which is cool because then you can test out your webhook by just pinging it and viewing the events when the webhook was triggered. It's nice to be able to, if you want to have like when you see something get updated or pushed to the registry, if you want to have something else go through and kick off like a new update for your deployment. So imagine like if you had a cluster of VMs and you were using either like say Docker Cloud or Kubernetes and you wanted to start rolling out an update. Well, when you push a new container, the container registry and the Azure Container Registry, you can now have a little bit of code that says, oh, hey, now let's go trigger off this rollout of an update.
Nice. Very cool indeed. Yeah, they're making some nice progress on the container side. So yes, but hopefully they'll do the whole container as a service, zero infrastructure for you, and then complete the circle.
Absolutely. Agreed. How about you? You got any Azure news for us?
Yeah, there's a little bit going on. Before we dive into sort of Microsoft-specific news, just thought I'd throw a shout-out for a good friend of the show, Steve Peschke, who we've had on the show about Office365mon.com before. He is launching a new service called the Azure Service Monitor, which is AzureServiceMon.com. So it's effectively the same sort of technology as Office 365 Mon, except for Azure. So he's launching it into beta, and it basically tells you whether your services in Azure are online and up, and what the sort of the uptime stats are and so forth over a period of time. So it's sort of a third-party independent set of statistics outside of what Microsoft gives you, which is really helpful. They are monitoring over a dozen resource types, including all the common ones like virtual machines, web apps, and so forth. And you can get alerts and webhooks and notifications and all that sort of stuff when your resources in Azure are up and down and all those kinds of things. So I guess if you're using something like New Relic for infrastructure monitoring, kind of plays into that space a little bit, but is very tailored to Azure specifically, deals with a bunch of PaaS-type things as well as IaaS-type things. So really definitely worthwhile taking a look at. But Steve has been on the show talking about Office 365 Mon before. You can go look up that show. He's a great guy. He's worked in the space for a long time and definitely worth checking out. So that is AzureServiceMon.com.
Very cool.
I have another one here, kind of a short one. There's a new public preview, Azure AD Domain Services Admin UX in the new Azure portal. So this is a pretty short blog post from Alex Simons at Microsoft, but there's a new public preview of the Azure AD Domain Services UX in the Azure portal. So now you can go create new AD domains, perform administrative tasks, and such through the new sort of blade-based admin portal, you know, much like you'd go create a regular machine and things like that. So worth checking out if you're trying to do some AD stuff in the cloud. Azure AD Domain Services is a little different than Azure Active Directory, right? Azure AD Domain Services is about sort of providing more of those traditional managed AD domain services like you'd have on-prem, but in the cloud, whereas Azure Active Directory is kind of a whole different beast. So you can definitely go check that out in the new admin portal.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have one here, one or two around Azure as well that are, I got one that just real briefly, that Event Hubs Capture, we used to call it Archive. It's now generally available. It was released as a public preview back in September of 2016. And what this does is it adds a dimension to Azure Event Hubs, which is a highly scalable data streaming platform and event ingestion service. That's, you can use that to, you know, receive and process millions of events per second. What the Event Hubs Capture, again, formerly called Archive, makes it really easy to send this data to persistent storage without using code or configuring other compute services. So when you get all that data, you can do all your work that you want to do with it. You don't want to lose it. Well, just go dump it off into persistent storage like an Azure for safekeeping if you need it down the road.
Yeah, interesting.
Another one that I caught coming across the interwebs was
is
nested virtualization. This got a lot of fanfare this week when I saw it released. I'll keep it at a very simple explanation, at least from the way I look at it, is that this allows you to create a big virtual machine in Azure and then create virtual machines inside of it. So instead of managing multiple virtual machines in Azure, you can just create one big one and then have a lot of little ones or a lot of smaller ones inside of it, really being able to mimic like the same kind of thing you do locally, which is one big piece of hardware and then lots of little pieces inside of it.
Yeah, gotcha. I can see why this is kind of big for... It kind of sounds quite counterintuitive, right? Because surely the point of Azure is to create virtual machines and put things in them versus creating one massive virtual machine and putting things inside that or putting more virtual machines inside that. But I sort of got thinking about it a little bit. And to me, it kind of makes sense for those who are trying to either take some on-premises infrastructure and move it to the cloud, you know, because you might have a Hyper-V sort of virtualization environment on-prem that you want to replicate part of or all of in Azure, maybe for a DR scenario or a lab environment or something. So I guess it makes sense in that regard to, you know, spin up some machines in Azure, put Hyper-V in there, and then add the same images or what have you, or setup or application or whatever that you've got running on your Hyper-V infrastructure on-prem. I'm guessing that's why a lot of people were interested in it. That would make sense to me. So yeah, but VMs inside VMs has always been a sort of a point of contention, right? It's been kind of hard to do for a while, because of various virtualization technologies conflicting and processor support and all that sort of stuff. So kind of interesting. And certainly just sort of opens them up for those scenarios that we're able to do before.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. You want to go again?
Oh, sure. I can go again. I don't know if you want to do another one.
Well, I just went two, so.
Oh, you went two. Okay.
Yeah. You could go two.
All right. So I have one. Let's see. Yeah, I have one more Azure one. I actually have an AWS one that kind of goes along with this. I'll throw them both together. On the Azure side, they announced some new virtual machine sizes. So these are called the DV3 and the EV3. What they did is they've changed the EV series or the EV VMs. They are essentially, they're renamed from what we used to know as the high memory D sizes. So if you're familiar with the D11, D12, D13, D14, those have now been renamed to the EV3 family. These new sizes are going to introduce hyper-threading running the Intel Broadwell E5-2673 V4 2.3 gigahertz chip and a Haswell chip.
Say that's fast while you're drunk 10 times.
Man, I'm trying to, could not have done that on Sunday.
Can't even say it sober.
Thank goodness for notes here, right? These new hyper-threaded sizes are going to be priced up to 20% lower than the previous DV2 sizes. So what they are, they're also some of the first virtual machines to be running on the Windows Server 2016 hosts that are out there, which enable nested virtualization and Hyper-V containers for these new VM sizes. Again, we just talked about what that was. They're going to allow us to run a Hyper-V container in a virtualized container host. And I think that, you know, this, we saw that the new VM sizes kind of came out before they announced the nested virtualization, or just a little bit before. But I mean, these are some big honking machines. I mean, if you go all the way up to a standard, gosh, it's funny they use the name standard in here, but if you go to a standard E64 V3 VM, you can have up to 64 virtual CPUs, 432 gigs of memory. That's 4 terabytes. No, that's not 4 terabytes, 432 megs. 1.6 gig SSD. You can have up to 32 data disks. What is it? 8 extremely high network sizes. I got no pricing on this stuff right now, but that's, I mean, there's some monster VMs that you can do here.
Wow.
Yeah. Now,
I'll have to take a look at those. That's kind of interesting.
Talking about going, you know, talking about VM sizes and stuff, AWS also announced this past week some new next generation GPU powered EC2 instances. They call them the G3. So they first introduced their G2 instances back in 2013, which were GPU based virtual machines, which are great for things like, to, you know, doing any kind of graphics rendering and stuff, but they're also heavily used, I know, for a lot of like AI-based stuff. These new ones, though, are, they're each support 8 gigs of GPU RAM or GPU memory, 2,000 parallel processing cores, and a hardware encoder capable of supporting up to 10 different streams, H265, which is the new stream, HEVC stream, up to 1080p, and also up to 18 H264 1080p streams, making them a great fit for 3D rendering and visualization, virtual reality, video encoding, remote graphics workstations like the NVIDIA Grid, or other server-sized graphics workloads that need massive amount of parallel processing power. Here's the cool part. These GPUs support OpenGL 4.5, DirectX 12, CUDA 8.0 from NVIDIA, and OpenCL 1.2. When you launch one of these guys, you're going to have access to the NVIDIA Grid virtual workstation license and make use of the NVIDIA Grid driver without having to purchase your own license. They all use the, here we go again, Intel Xeon E5-2686V4 Broadwell chip running at 2.7 gigahertz.
Good grief, that's a lot of acronyms.
All these VMs and all the power that you guys are putting into it, I really want to come across one of these, a business that's using all of this stuff that clearly there's a demand for it. And I mean, I get why the clouds are wanting to use it because it's what's supporting a lot of their services that they offer. But good God, this is
that's a lot. So I've got two other pieces of news. The first is kind of short, so I'll just quickly go over it. There's a new video out on Azure Friday that came out on July the 13th about the Azure Network Watcher. So it's Scott Hanselman, and it's about a 13 or 14 minute video interviewing or talking with Matt Reet, giving an overview of the Network Watcher service. And we've talked about this just in passing as part of a news show a while back. But in effect, the Network Watcher gives you the ability to peer inside your network between services and bits and pieces going on in Azure. So it's really good for, you know, debugging and diagnostics of what's happening in your applications, in complex applications, especially up in Azure. So if you want an overview, it's a good video. It's a short video just about the Azure Network Watcher. We'll link to it in the show notes, obviously. The second piece of news is an announcement from Microsoft saying, Microsoft announces Project Olympus support for new Intel Xeon scalable processors. So again, we've talked about Project Olympus on the show before, but in a nutshell, it is Microsoft's kind of, I guess, open initiative to hyperscale cloud hardware design, right? So whatever that means, they're basically putting out reference hardware designs for cloud computing is kind of what I see, you know, translate that to mean. But they've added support for some new Intel Xeon scalable processors. So you can go check that out. It's Project Olympus. They're basically saying here that they've worked closely with Intel to engineer I think I'm pronouncing it right, ARIA, A-R-R-I-A, ARIA 10 FPGAs, which are deployed on every single Project Olympus server to create configurable cloud. So you know how we've spoken a bunch about FPGAs and things? So this is part of that being rolled into their cloud hardware design docs and reference architecture, I guess, for want of a better word. Kind of interesting. So these things, I mean, some of the other hardware, it's got 50 gig networking, 8 M. You know, the M.2 NVMe SSDs, you know, like the, have you heard of these? These little like high bus bandwidth drives, SSDs, pretty much wired directly onto the motherboard. Pretty cool. You can get them in desktop PCs now too.
Yeah.
Pretty nice. Huh. Yeah, so a ton of these kinds of things, including these FPGAs, which we've talked a little bit about, be kind of cool to do something with, but I haven't had a chance yet.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of a blueprint. I'm assuming Microsoft are making this into actual hardware that they're deploying into Azure.
I don't know.
But not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Haven't seen that part yet. I think this is just a reference design, but I guess they'll come out and say, voila, we're running like most of Azure on this now.
Anybody else can do it if you can figure out the hardware.
That's right. Yeah, good luck with your soldering iron at home.
Absolutely. Cool. That's a lot of news. We got a bunch of news we covered in this episode.
Yeah, for sure. Shall we move right along and quickly talk to one of our fantastic sponsors?
Absolutely.
What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. And it flows in and out of the tools you use every day. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
All right, AC, it's that time of the day, my friend.
Woo!
We get to wow everybody with our superior and pointless picks.
You know what? I actually have a good little mention here, too, because we have a listener pick that was submitted that kind of near and dear to us, too. you're looking at my notes, aren't you?
Yeah, I certainly am.
So Paul Schaeflein, which in the notes, I can never spell Paul's last name, so I always end up saying Paul S-C-H-A-E-F-L-E-I-N, and then I just start typing a bunch of stuff.
Amen. Yeah.
That's how CJ knows who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He submitted one the other day. This is on the NASA image of the day, but it's on the earthobservatory.nasa.gov site, and there's the image of the day, and it talks about that the Langley Research Center has turned 100 just recently. Langley it's a NASA facility, Langley Research Center. Normally when you hear about Langley, you usually think about, you know, CIA, because that's where the CIA headquarters is. But the NASA has a research center there, and this is where they did a lot of the research and development for, God, like the old P-51 Mustang, the nation's first fixed wing tunnel built full-sized aircraft. And then they did a ton of work around the space program, designing and testing rockets and astronaut testing for Mercury, Gemini, and the Apollo program. So it was, a lot of the astronauts even practiced the moon landings there with the lunar lander at Langley. So it turned 100 as a big milestone. And the image of the day piece of it is a overhead view, a satellite view of what it looks like.
Wow, that's really interesting. I have an interesting fact about Langley and the NASA research facility there.
Do tell.
You want to hear it?
No, I'm not interested in space.
Okay. I don't care. I'm going to tell you anyway.
Cool.
So Apollo 1 is stored there.
Really?
Which was the capsule where the three, obviously, you know this, but for our listeners' benefit, who aren't as nerdy as we are, the three astronauts that died in a fire in the capsule on the top of a rocket during a test, Grissom, White, and Roger Chaffee. And the Apollo 1 capsule is stored at the Langley Research Facility up there and hasn't seen the light of day since that time. Like, it's not been put on display, obviously. It's not been shown or anything like that. There's been, I think, a couple of pieces have been shown more recently. But, it was in a storage facility there for a while that ended up leaking, and it wasn't very well looked after and things. But I think back in 2007 now, it got moved to a new climate-controlled storage facility. So, that's at Langley. That was interesting. I just came across that, a year or so ago, and thought that was pretty interesting that they're keeping it there.
That's very interesting, yeah. How about you? You got a pick?
Yeah, I do. So a while back, you'll remember perhaps I talked about tracking aircraft with a Raspberry Pi. Of course, I didn't really put the effort into a great write-up, but somebody else did on the 17th of July, 2017. And it's called Get Eyes in the Sky with Your Raspberry Pi. And it basically details almost to the letter exactly what I did with a DVB-T USB receiver. So it turns out the transponders on planes give out signals. It's over the air. Obviously, you can get a really cheap USB stick to pick them up. And then you can feed them into systems like flightaware.com and things like that to sort of help crowdsource the location of aircraft for tracking purposes and timings and all the stuff that flightaware.com do. I use them for watching people's planes when they're coming into Seattle, right? I track their aircraft and see when they're going to arrive and when they're on time, and I know to leave to the airport roughly when they cross the Oregon-Washington border.
Oh, no kidding.
It's pretty useful. Yeah, it's a good time to leave, to go to the airport. So this article that we'll link to, the interesting part is I did it just on a Raspberry Pi directly, but this article does it all with Docker and containers. So they've got some pre-canned Docker containers that you can download. They walk you through setting up Docker on a Raspberry Pi, running these containers, getting it all up and running, and rocking and rolling with that. They give you the bill of materials, all the links to go where you go get this stuff. And so if you're sort of aviation geek or what have you, it's super easy to get started, and you can sort of crowdsource information into FlightAware and stuff like that. Kind of pointless, but also kind of fun.
I saw it was written up. I noticed this post the other day written up by Alex Ellis, one of the Docker captains.
Yeah.
Just kind of like their version of an MVP program. When you call Docker captains, kind of like a Docker MVP.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got some, if you're into Docker, you're into containers, it's a good blog to follow.
Yeah. I thought it was really cool because it's I'm going to have to redo my setup with Docker now because I don't use any of that on the Raspberry Pi just yet.
Docker all the things, man.
Absolutely. Why not? So much easier.
Heck yeah. Hey, I've got a pair of picks here. One of them I teased a little bit last week, but going off on the developers.google.com web/website, they have, I talked about what's new in the Chrome DevTools in number 59, which, you know, doing some cool stuff like getting screenshots and printing the DOM and stuff like that. I got a new one here for them. It was an April update, but it's really, people are really starting to see it in there in Chrome today as a capability. It was available in April, but only in Chrome Canary, which is kind of like the beta version of Chrome. This is getting started with headless Chrome. So why would you want to do that? Well, this is mainly for developers, but when you would build an application, you wanted to test your application, especially if you're doing things like with Angular or React or anything client-side. We used to use a little utility called Phantom.js, which was kind of like a little wrapper around the Chromium project, which is what Chrome is fundamentally based on. What this does is this new Chrome headless support essentially lets you fire up the Chrome process, but without kind of seeing Chrome launch and then interacting with it programmatically. So you can say, you know, go to the command prompt, you can say Chrome dash dash headless dash dash disable the GPU dash dash remote debugging port equals 992 and then space the URL you want to open. So why would you want to do that? When does this stuff, is it useful? Well, now you actually can do your testing in a real full-blown browser for full automated testing, not only in a client environment, but you can also now also do it in a server environment where you don't need a visible UI. Like you may want to run some tests against a real web page, or maybe even create a PDF of a web page, or just inspect of how a browser renders a specific URL, but you want to do it all programmatically. So there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do with this. Like, let's say if you want to go print, you know, a very popular website, if you want to go to grab a PDF version of what our website looks like, go to Chrome dash dash headless dash, and this is all from the command line, Chrome dash dash headless dash dash disable GPU dash dash print dash two dash PDF space http://www.microsoftcloudshow.com. And then you go get a PDF of the Microsoft Cloud Show. You do have to use this dash dash disable GPU for right now. It's like a temporary workaround on something. Mm. But it's slick, man. It lets you take a screenshot. It lets you specify the window size when the browser opens up. My God, that was so hard to control with Phantom. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. That is interesting. I'll have to check that out. That'll be useful for like testing purposes and stuff too.
That's big time useful for testing. Yeah, that I think is the primary use case for it. And then my second pick, I'm going to pivot back to go geeky again. Well, I guess if my last one wasn't geeky. NASA has released a, quote, dramatic Pluto flyover video. So this was done using the data from the New Horizons spacecraft that did a flyby of Pluto in 2015, which gives us spectacular new perspectives on the many unusual features that were discovered with the help, which have reshaped our views of the Pluto system, which, of course, isn't big enough to be a planet, which I think is still crap.
Whatever.
Yeah, I think.
Still a planet in my mind.
There was a... Can I go off color for a second? You think our listeners would be okay with that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so there's a funny t-shirt that I wanted to get. I just don't have the guts to kind of wear it out in public and everything. But it's a funny t-shirt. It's a geeky shirt, and it says Pluto, and it says, I was big enough for your mom. So.
Rough. That's funny. Yeah, I mean, I grew up with Pluto being a planet. Still near and dear to my heart. Poor little Pluto.
Yeah, I think it's a planet. It's still a planet to me. I don't care what Neil deGrasse Tyson says.
Yeah. Still orbits the sun.
Sounds like it to me.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, dude.
Quick episode.
Excellent show.
Yeah, quick episode today.
Interesting picks. Yeah, exactly. But got through a bunch of good news. Hope people really enjoyed it. Obviously, a few interesting picks there at the end. And we will all see you again next week. We've got a part two of the Paul Schaeflein interview series. This one is coming up on the Bot Framework next week, so stay tuned for that. Really interesting stuff, learning all about what Microsoft is doing in the bot space.
Paul Stubbs.
Gosh, I'm getting it all completely around the wrong way. Now you made fun of Paul's last name earlier on. I got all mixed up. So yes, Paul Stubbs.
All good, man. Hey, good show. Good seeing you again.
Likewise. Catch up.
Cheers, man.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.